I'm Blake Hardcastle. This is the Stories You've Missed podcast.
Welcome back to Stories You've Missed. These are accounts of God's amazing grace in the lives of ordinary people at Grand Parkway Baptist Church. Today, my guests are George and Monica Grindstaff. And Monica grew up in Alaska, where she worked small jobs in retail, was a gopher for a lawyer, and sang at weddings for hire. She was a foreign exchange student in Japan. Arigato. Nintendo. Those are the two words I know. She married George when she was 18. Scandal. We'll talk about that in a little bit. She's been a stay-at-home mom and has homeschooled for 25 years. George was raised in a small cow town called Big Piney. Probably many more cattle than people. In Wyoming, he has worked in ranching and oil field and earned a BS in petroleum engineering from the University of Wyoming. Go Cowboys?
Go Cowboys.
Is there a whoop or a... No.
No.
Okay.
I think it's more just a...
He went to Alaska for work, and there he found a wife, Monica. He has worked as a reservoir engineer for 36 years and more recently has run his own consulting business. George and Monica have been married for 32 years. They have 10 children. That's not a typo. 10. And they have been at Grand Parkway since 2018. Welcome, George and Monica.
Thank you.
So tell me, how did you meet? You met in Alaska?
I think I should tell my part. And then she tells hers. Our kids get a kick out of it.
Okay.
When we do it that way. So my side is, okay, I found the Lord. I was working on the North Slope with my hands. And a man led me to the Lord by asking me, you know, have you read the scripture for yourself?
And how old are you right now when this happens?
Okay, so this is approximately 27, 28.
Okay.
So I'm out of school.
Yeah.
I'm working up, you know, I just get the only job I could because there were no jobs when I got out of school.
Okay.
I'm working in the oil field in the North Slope. And a very special man. I consider him my father today because my father has passed away. But he introduced me to the Lord. And, you know, and then it came like, well, where are you going to go to church?
So God finds you in Alaska through this gentleman.
Yes.
And he didn't just leave you. Hey, you're saved. Okay, see you later.
No, he was a real friend, and he still is. And so he asked about church, and I said, well, you know, we went to church when I was growing up, the Episcopal Church, you know, and it was just almost tradition. So he said, well, you need to find a church.
And what city are you closest to in Alaska?
This is in Anchorage.
Okay, which is one of the biggest or bigger cities there?
It is the biggest.
Okay,
yeah,
but it's Alaska, so
yeah,
it's not like...
It's like 300,000 people. Yeah, that's it. So he gave some recommendations, and I hemmed and hawed, and I said, I'll just go here. The Prudhoe Bay Community Church, which was three people, he, myself, and another guy. So finally I said, okay, no, I understand. So I started going to this Bible church, Chapel by the Sea. And I actually met her parents first.
Okay.
And we would meet, have a little Wednesday Bible study, and then the men would go to one side and the ladies would go to the other to pray. And I always looked forward to this prayer time. And her dad was serving as an elder. So I got to know her mom and dad before I knew her.
Yeah.
And long story short, my story is, I look up, I'm sitting by my best friend who's a real discipler for me.
Okay.
And there's Monica in the choir.
Okay.
And I say, where did she come from? And my friend starts laughing. And I was like, quit. And it was just like she appeared.
Okay.
Literally. And I was very interested. And so I asked her to come to our Bible group.
Now, her parents, were they... boyfriend shopping? Is that, no, they weren't doing
definitely
that.
Definitely not.
No.
They're just being...
I mean, here I am. I'm 27, 28 years old. She's 17, 18.
Yeah.
And when I finally realized, you know, I really want to take her out, I wouldn't do it. I said, well, the only way I can do this, how do I do this? I'm actually new to Christianity.
Yeah.
I wanted to do this the right way.
How long have you been a believer at this point?
About a year.
Yeah.
Okay. So I go to her mom, and I'm trying to get these words out, you know, can I ask your daughter?
Right.
And finally, she gives me she realizes, oh, your tongue is all over it, right? Just take her out. We know you, George. You can take her out. Okay. So I did.
Now, Monica, did you know who George was?
Yes. I had been observing him. I don't know. It does sound kind of scandalous. Yeah. Because I graduated at 17, and we were married that summer when I was 18. So I didn't know him for that long, really, but he just became a presence at our church.
Yeah.
He was there for everything.
Okay.
And what I observed, I really respected. I just saw in him just this eagerness. I think I've always told the kids, your dad grew in 6 months as much as I grew in 10 years.
Those years, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Yeah. So I got to know the people at the church and her parents before I knew her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it didn't seem unnatural, the age difference, because she seemed very mature. And I actually, in looking back, I was very immature.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like we kind of met there. Mm-hmm.
Now, when George asked you, hey, you want to go walk by the bay where the fish cannery is and smell tort? But what did you guys do? What do you remember?
Okay, so I can give a little bit of backstory on my life. Because that foreign exchange trip to Japan happened. So I came to Christ as a young child, but then at the age of 16, I had really drifted.
Okay.
I was living a double life. And
did you drift because you were really doubting, or you just, Christianity does not seem fun. I want to have fun.
I was wanting to have fun.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going after it hardcore, and my parents caught me when I was 16.
Okay.
And I had a... You know, I don't know if we're supposed to go into this, but I had an experience like Martin Luther. I literally, when I saw the movie of Martin Luther with the lightning bolt and the rain falling and him on his knees, that's how I remember the night I was caught by my parents when I was 16. So the awesome thing about that is everything changed for me instantly. And I, after being a parent for a while, have realized that doesn't happen for everyone. I took that for granted, and I'm so thankful.
You also don't get to pick what age that happens at.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just became a new creation. Mm. So then I left all my friends in high school and became best friends with my parents.
Because these friends were, they were friends only for fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then when I got a scholarship to go to Japan as a foreign exchange student right after graduation, I have a journal that it's incredible from the front to the back. It's filled with my handwriting. God was just working so much in my life. Mm. I had my Bible with me at all times.
Yeah.
And I had dreams. I had visions. God was there with me. Mm. It was a time in history when it wasn't easy to call home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There were no smartphones, and
certainly not FaceTime or something like that. And yeah. Yes,
and I couldn't speak Japanese, and my family couldn't speak English.
Yeah,
so I got very close to the Lord.
There, mm-hmm. That was instrumental.
My host mother was a believer, and my host father was a Shinto practicing man.
Yeah.
And they had a book of 400 foreign exchange students, and she chose me. She wanted me in her home, and so that's another piece of how God worked.
Yeah.
In my life, I was in church like 5 times a week. They were brethren. And so, I had to wear the head covering, and they were closed communion. They wouldn't serve me communion until I'd lived there for quite some time, because they weren't sure if I was a believer.
If you were converted,
which
yeah.
really led to introspection. And I first was very offended, and then introspection.
Yeah.
So God had done all of that in my life. And then I came home. I told my parents, I can't leave to go to the University of Montana like I had planned. I can't leave you guys.
So you were planning on going to Montana?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I said...
What were you going to... You were going to study like biology, science?
Right. And I said, Mom and Dad, lots of tears, lots of emotions. Yeah. Coming back was that cross-cultural...
How long were you in Japan?
Whatever they call that. It was only 2 months.
Okay.
So, but it affected me deeply.
I'm guessing you were a little lonely.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So I just said, can I stay home?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we'd love to have you. I'm the firstborn, and they weren't ready to let me go anyway. Mm-hmm. So I was planning to stay in Anchorage and study. And then I was taking flowers to my mom one afternoon at work and saw a car accident. Mm-hmm. And the door had flown open on this car. It was, the authorities hadn't gotten there yet. And I looked in and saw a gentleman with his head back and blood dripping down. And I just started praying. Mm-hmm. And I get to my mom's work and, Mom, we got to get on our knees. We got to pray for this man. I don't know if he's going to make it. Mm-hmm. I just saw this. And that was George.
George. Wow.
Yeah, I had been at lunch making a left-hand turn across the three-lane traffic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I didn't know it at the time. My vision had really changed. And I wasn't seeing very well.
Okay.
And a green car with a green building behind it was coming at 60 miles an hour. And the lights went out.
Wow.
So it was really interesting that that she drove by, and they went and started praying for me. This is really before we had even met.
This before you were attending that church?
No, I was attending
the
chapel.
Wow.
But Monica didn't really.
Yeah.
I was fresh home from foreign exchange and 17 still.
Right.
And so I went. We get home that night. Mom gets home from work. Dad comes home from a late night elder meeting and says, kids, this is serious. That young man, George Grindstaff from our church, was in a terrible car accident today. He's really hurt. And we all just stopped in our tracks and absorbed the and prayed for him. And then I wrote him a letter, which was quite forward of me, honestly. Mm-hmm. And we still have the letter.
In what way?
We still have the letter.
Well, I think I knew I'd really like to know him.
Okay.
My heart seems to be drawn toward him.
Yeah.
I think I knew that. And not writing the letter would have probably been more patient of me.
Okay.
But I wrote the letter.
Okay.
So.
Okay. How? When did you know? I think this is the one. This is the one I'm supposed to marry. This is the one I'm supposed to be with. This is the one for me. Mm-hmm. This is the one I want.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that goes in different stages for each of us. We went out our very first date. We went to this special restaurant, and it was Cajun.
Cajun in Anchorage, Alaska.
in Girdwood, Alaska.
You got a lot of Boudreaux's and Thibodeaux's up there?
And you're kind of baffled at sometimes things that happen. But we sat down to eat, and the conversation went to having children.
Okay.
And we talked about having children most of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so excited to talk about having children. And then afterward, you're like, what were we thinking?
So now that's
a memory. It's like, boy, how did that work?
Your family is what most people would classify as a large family.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know at that conversation that a large family? No, not a, did Monica shake her head? No.
No way.
What was your cap? How many kids?
I just thought I was going to be a career woman.
Okay.
I mean, I had always made jokes about, bad jokes about my mom being a secretary.
Okay.
And that I was going to have a secretary someday.
I've been to Japan. I can do stuff. Yeah.
I was smart. My brain just took in the information easily.
Yeah.
I just assumed I've got a career ahead of me.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what I was thinking about children. I think I thought that they were a headache. I did not like my little brothers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was not particularly a great babysitter.
Yeah.
So.
But we started talking about children. And
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have any preconceived notions about having children other than, to me, getting married and having children, it's like, well, I can just see that's God's design. But no preconceived ideas about what that means.
And so you guys get married, and then all magical life happens. You become a career woman? No, you're shaking your...
I was in college, as you can imagine, at 18.
Yeah.
And
her dad really wanted her there, so we honored what her mother and father wanted.
Mm-hmm.
We took that seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are we to say we'll do what we want?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was going to the university and doing fine, doing well. And then we just had this serendipitous moment and realized, hey, wait a second. Everybody in the world, everyone that we respect and love has told us we're not supposed to have children for 5 to 7 years because we're supposed to know each other really well.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that's in the Bible. And we actually threw away the birth control pills. Mm-hmm. We tell the kids this story. Mm-hmm. And I think in just a few months, we had our first child on the way. And I just kept on going to college. And people at the church loved us so much. They just wanted to take care of my baby. And he was so sweet. But every time I left him, I felt so conflicted.
Hmm.
And I just finally told George, everything is set up for me to finish this career, but my heart is not in it. Mm-hmm. I want to be home with my, mm-hmm. I want to make this my full-time job.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about that?
Well, I didn't. I was all for her staying home and not doing the career. I had a career I could provide. But there was quite a struggle there with her parents wanting her to finish school,
mm-hmm.
desiring to honor that. But at the same time, it was like, well, we feel like God wants us to have to just naturally let.
Yeah.
You know, whenever children come. And so it was like, do we obey man?
Yeah.
Do we obey God? And God says, obey your parents. So there's a tension.
Yeah.
And when we got past that, we knew we had done the right thing.
Yeah.
But then the first baby came so fast.
And the first baby is?
Jacob. He's 30 now.
And yeah. So Jacob... when Jacob arrives, are you thinking, oh, yeah, this is just 10% of our quiver? Or are you thinking, no.
Yeah, that's a funny story.
I'll tell this one.
Okay.
We're having the birth. It's a nurse midwife practitioner because Monica wanted to have mm-hmm. a natural birth, but with someone who was more of a midwife.
Yeah.
So this lady is so wonderful. She could give you a C-section if you wanted, which is not very many midwives.
Sure.
So we have the baby, and I'm kind of shocked because they're like, that's the baby's head, and I didn't believe it. It's like, how could that be the baby's head? I'm looking at this, and I'm trying to support Monica. Well, the baby's born, and we put the baby up on Mama's chest, and she looks at me. And immediately says, oh, that was so wonderful. I want to have as many as God gives us. And I'm just like, oh, what did I get into?
My mother remembers me saying something about, I hope I can have a dozen.
A dozen.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But I was shocked.
Yeah. Yeah. In the, what have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about God as he's been adding kids? You know, in your life, what I often tell people is you don't really know how selfish you can be mm-hmm. until you get married.
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't know how selfish you can be
mm-hmm.
until kids enter the picture.
Yes.
That's for sure. Yes.
I like people to know. I would like people to know that it has not been easy for me to have 10 children, that I didn't. If I had known how hard it was going to be, I often tell people, if I had known how hard it was going to be, I would definitely not have done that. And how sad that is to think about. But that's the truth. It's been a lot harder than I thought.
Yeah.
My role model was my grandmother, who raised 6 children. And I got to see those adult children, my aunts and uncles, having the most amazing holidays. They all lived in Alaska. And so to watch them all and their children, that's what I wanted. But the process to get there is a much more difficult process than I realized at the time. And I do think that's part of God's mercy to us. That
you got to see the finished piece of furniture. You didn't get to see plant the tree, you know, let it grow, prune it, process all the work to get to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm very thankful that I stuck with it. I'm thankful that I didn't give up. But there were plenty of times when I said, so George and I took the unusual route of allowing children to come when God gave them to us.
Yeah.
But there were times when I I have a memory of going to some type of Planned Parenthood in Scotland and sitting down and saying, I need help. And the lady laughed me to scorn, and she made me so sure that I was not going to take any birth control because of the way she handled me. She was so unkind and so unappreciative of children that it sent me back home and really made me stop and think. Like, we all know that those resources are available to us, and I could have done that. And there were times when I did for a short period, and then I would think, oh, this just isn't me. God is calling me to trust him again. So that was always in the back of my mind. Do you trust me, Monica?
Yeah.
Do you trust me again, Monica? And I'd have to look at my life, and yes, I had certain children that were harder to raise than others, and international moves and so on. And I always came down to, yes, I know I can trust him again. Mm-hmm. I know he's good enough, and I know he's with me.
Yeah, that's one of the things that you discovered about yourself, or that God made in you. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about you, George? What have you learned about God or learned about yourself?
Well, I was surprised at how your kids mimic your faults. So
not your awesomeness.
Yeah. Right.
Any little slight, imperfection, it's almost like they can shine it for everybody to see.
Ah.
It's like, oh yeah, that's me. Uh-huh. And the birth order, there's so much. Each child that came it's like they were so uniquely placed in the order that God wanted them. And I didn't even realize it, that God must have known, of course, we were on this pathway, and he ordered the birth and the sex to be just unique in provision.
That what fit in that particular time when expert came?
And you look back, it was like, that's so unique, so unique. Mm-hmm. Only God could do that, And
so Jacob, your oldest is 30. Mm-hmm. How old is your youngest?
11.
And
11.
And their name is?
That's Rosie.
That's Rosie. We give Rosie a shout out. And so 30 to 11. Does parenting ever end?
No, that took me by surprise.
You thought there was a finish line?
Well, Monica was so much better at the younger ages.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would probably pick up more weight on the teen side. Mm-hmm. But when they're adult children, now you have a whole nother, you tend to think, well, they're adults. Mm. Off you go. We've trained you. We've done our best. Come back and we'll spoil the grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't end, and it's becoming more of a joy. Because it's causing us to grow in the Lord, that they need you. It's not that you're parenting them, but it's a whole different type of discipleship. Mm-hmm. I would say it's a period of life when they are adults. We do not want them under our, we're not trying to train them anymore.
Yeah,
and you learn to be good friends. I feel like I'm a very good friend to my oldest, and he'll call me and ask me for my input.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because sometimes I feel like, well, you have probably more to bear on this than I do. He's just a sharp guy, but he wants my input. And I find that intriguing that I still can be there with wisdom.
Yeah. As you think back over your 3+ decades together, are there one or two things that come to mind of, ooh, this is a time God really rescued us, God really came through as provider?
We did think of a few things that would have changed our life if God hadn't stepped in. Mm-hmm. But we also thought of our present day, which I think would be more impactful for anyone who might hear this, but I can quickly tell that when we lived in Scotland, we had a son who coughed at night. He was a little baby, and he coughed at night until he would wake up and sound like he was going to vomit in his crib.
Mm.
And we knew something was wrong, but he looked fine on the outside. And we paid, it's a socialized medical system, but we paid for a private doctor to take us to the, to look into his lungs. And we happened to get an appointment the day before we went to Cairo, Egypt.
Moving for work.
With the family.
Yeah.
It was just travel, but I wanted to go with George.
Yeah.
And he had been traveling a lot without us. And I said, we'll come this time. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, Cairo's wonderful. You're going to have a great time. I said, should I take any medicine for the baby? Oh, no, you're going to be fine. He looks great. And that next day, we get onto the tarmac, landing in Cairo, and the jet fuel and exhaust.
Irritated or exasperated
something.
Okay.
And I would say by two nights in,
I think it was the second
The second day, basically, George didn't have a cell phone. A lot of people did, but he didn't have one. He didn't give me his number. I had no way to get a hold of him. And I'm in the hotel in Cairo with the children. So this would be five children. Mm-hmm. And I was just holding the baby in the corner of the room, and he was just getting quieter and quieter. And mm-hmm. I thought if you were having an asthma attack, you would wheeze. Mm-hmm. But I knew something was wrong. And when George came home late that night with a coworker to take us to dinner, I broke into tears and just sobbed. And I said, something's wrong with the baby. I don't know what's wrong. And God saved us by getting us immediately to the company nurse, who immediately knew that he could die soon. So
I got him to the nurse. It's kind of difficult traveling around there.
Sure.
But we got there, and I'm holding the baby. She looks at me from a distance, and she grabs the phone and starts calling for an ambulance.
The nurse.
And I said, what? Yeah. What? And she goes, he is status asthmaticus. He will die tonight. And you know, my heart sank. And
can you still feel that today? Mm-hmm. Can you relive it? Yeah.
Oh, yes. It's like, oh, my. And we had tried so hard to get the right, you know, to get doctors to respond to this, and there was nothing. So it was really God's provision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which child is this?
This is Ben.
Ben.
And what's Ben doing today?
He's studying economics at Sam Houston University.
Yeah. He's just really a shining light. He's just doing so well.
Yeah.
People say he has a twinkle in his eye.
Uh-huh.
He's a very handsome young man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We came back. The asthma continued.
Mm-hmm.
When we returned from Alaska after 3 years in Scotland, his asthma completely went away and has never come back.
Mm-hmm. And he played football in the heat here, so that was a
good
test.
If he's ever going to be irritated again, he had his chances for sure. Do you ever think about if you could travel back in time and tell yourself in the corner with the baby, it is going to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
By the time we don't know that. And
I just think that's something, looking back, I just see God's careful care. I was very, very aware of Elizabeth Elliot, I think, is the one that became famous saying, you're under the everlasting arms. Mm-hmm. I think she would always end her programs with that or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was super aware of that. It was as if I was under the wings of God. Mm. And people would ask me during different pregnancies, how in the world are you surviving?
Mm-hmm.
Just one day at your house, I'd love to be a fly on the wall. People have always said those things. And I would be able to tell them, I actually feel the presence of God, mm-hmm. like I'm under his wing. And it was when we moved here that it went away. So that's an interesting part of my story, but it literally went away. And it's crazy. I don't know how to even describe it, but to just tell you.
And so you would say, I'm not a super person, I'm not a superwoman.
No.
I'm just someone who God's supernaturally protecting, providing, caring for.
Yeah. And he would give me a calm somehow to maintain with all the craziness of all the...
You mentioned earlier that there's a more recent example of God moving in a significant way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why don't you start?
Well, I guess I would, it's a period of time, and you don't really, it would be impossible to see God's, how it was God doing it all along until the period of time.
When it step keeps, back and it all comes into focus.
You keep looking back, okay. You know, you can see the forest only when you come out of the trees. So it's almost 7 years now. I left the company I was working for, and I've never been able to land another job. So
another full time.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and with my experience and what I do, that's kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had this wonderful career, and I know people all over the world, and it's been really wonderful, but you know, there has not been another job. So finally I started a company,
mm-hmm.
I started my own business and worked for 3 years just trying to, when you start a business in oil and gas, you're a nobody, and you're a nobody until you're proven to be a somebody.
Yeah.
And how, you know, so it's like pulling teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So for 3 years, work, I finally get this business up and going right when COVID came.
Mm-hmm.
So then when it hit, all the contracts I finally were able to get, mm-hmm. they were done.
Everything's on pause at least. Or
I did not make one penny on all those contracts because everything went down.
Yeah.
The commodity price actually went below zero.
Negative at one point, yeah.
Yeah. So so then it's like, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
So I always, to credit to my father growing up as a rancher in Wyoming, I always have something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's been serving other people and being more mindful of my family.
Mm-hmm.
But no income for 7 years, that's been a pretty rough one.
Yeah.
And it's not been zero, but it's been near zero.
Mm-hmm.
So all through that time, you just look at that and say, wow, and God's provided.
Mm.
We have been able.
You haven't gone without meals for days and weeks.
No.
You haven't been living under a bridge. You haven't gotten kicked out of your home. You haven't.
No. Yeah. So I'll let Monica proceed.
It was George's idea that we move overseas with the oil and gas business. And that was in 2000. And we already had made good financial decisions. That mm-hmm. was on the table when we got married.
Mm-hmm.
So we joked and laughed and said it was like God opened up this bank account and just mm-hmm. poured money in mm-hmm. while we were living overseas. And we would just laugh about it because we had read the book of...
Oh, yeah, Letourneau.
He
tried to see how much he could give.
Give away.
Yeah. I think he got 90-some percent.
Yeah.
So we had read that book, and we were just given more, and we were just loving our life. George was going on missions trips to Africa, and just it was so good.
Yeah.
So that's something that God has really shown us is he's always given us enough, but he's also always given us enough to share with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been all along. It's always been that way. And so
hadn't just been enough for you, but it's been enough to be generous.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we always lived below the standard of living that mm-hmm. other people in the oil and gas maybe would have had.
Right.
And we loved it. We just loved our life. And George could tell you stories of filling up the freezer with moose and fish.
Right,
and
yeah.
Feeding the family for the whole year. Yeah. So we just lived that way. That's what we've been living off of.
Yeah.
We never knew why we saved that money.
Joseph... 7 years storing grain.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that.
And 7 years pulling it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And our teenagers, when we moved here 12 years ago, looked around at everybody with their new iPhones and their nice cars and clothing and wondered, you know, Mom, what is it about us? You know, our house doesn't have new furniture in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could buy these things for us.
Right.
Why aren't you doing that?
Never have
and I said, you know, we're just the same people we've always been. And yes, we've been placed here, but we're not planning to live like everybody else.
Yeah.
Well, now they know why. And now they're adult men to raise their own families and have their own financial mm-hmm. decisions. And I think what a difference that's going to make as they remember what God has done in their dad's life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Think about a couple that's been married, 5 years or less. What advice would you give them? What do they need to hear?
Okay. One of the biggest ones for me is just go to church, be a part of a local church.
Go to church. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Don't even think about listening to your excuses. There's more than you could ever count.
What are they forfeiting or missing out on if they do give in to their excuses and don't go?
The church has literally been our lifeline mm-hmm. this entire 32 years. I mean, and even before we got married. So moving overseas, there has never been a time when we have not been a part of a local church, and we knew that there were problems. There was a time when we were attending a church in Norway that didn't preach the gospel mm-hmm. at all,
yeah.
but we went faithfully whenever they were open, and we have stories and testimonies to give of how God directed us to certain people and enlarged our borders and enlarged our minds to be able to see the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. It was very hard for me in Scotland to attend a Presbyterian church because I'd been raised in a Bible church.
Right.
And every time they would dedicate a baby, I would feel choked up. Like, this isn't right. I don't. And they had everybody stand, and it was a very solemn occasion, and I struggled and wrestled with that.
For some listeners, in general, Presbyterians don't practice believer's baptism where you dunk them all the way under. Mm-hmm. It'd be an infant and you sprinkle on top in the hopes that they'll become a believer. Okay.
Yes.
And so this would, even though this was probably in some places, this is my best church option. Mm-hmm. I really don't like this part of it. Mm-hmm. And you didn't use that as an excuse to say, I'm just not going to go.
I wanted to. There were lots of times when I just wanted to say, George, you go alone. I'll stay with the baby. That's my classic excuse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's gotten me out of a lot of hard things.
The baby.
Like camping.
Right.
Tent camping.
If you only knew. But I am so thankful looking back. Yeah. Oh, so incredibly curious.
So those relationships in the congregations were predominantly God was, providing, protecting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's that accountability that next Sunday,
right.
It doesn't matter how much I can't stand to look in my husband's eye right now or whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how bad the fight was that I had with my teenager. We're going to church on Sunday and we're going to be around people who know us.
Yeah. So you weren't necessarily going, hey, we're going to go, everyone fake it. We're going to go because this is one of God's main means of changing us.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And if any of our kids wouldn't want to go to church, I would never make them go to church.
Okay.
I would not do that.
What did that look like?
I would talk to them. I would try to get to the bottom of, okay, what's going on here? But you don't have to go to church if you don't want. We go because we love the Lord.
Yeah.
And, if you're having a struggle, fine. But this is not a legalistic thing. This is us.
Yeah.
This is who we are.
Yeah.
We love the Lord. We're going because we want to be,
we
want to worship and we want to be with God's people. But if you're made to go, in their mind, it's like, that's something you can rebel at that point.
Mm-hmm. And did any of your kids ever say, okay, you know what? The lecture's too hard. I'm going to go to church.
We definitely had a sleeper. We had a consistent sleeper. And we had arguments over what to wear to church. So that's a whole different story, which we were going to talk about how God has delivered us from legalism.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Please.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big part of our story. During the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of parachurch mm-hmm. groups.
Yeah.
And we had decided we wanted to school at home, and we got into a parachurch organization, and it's just all character building, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching, but it really was, there was a side of legalism to it, and I kind of just mocked it. It's like, oh, these people. But I wanted to be a support to Monica. She really saw this could be such good for our kids.
Yeah.
But as time went by, we would go to these meetings and things, and it was like, you know, this standard of being successful as a family with your children was all that you do. You know, how many of your kids play the violin, and mm-hmm. how music, you know, and these
kind of the resume building of a child kind of
absolutely
thing.
Mm-hmm. And finally it came to loggerheads, and I was like, I don't think this is good for us. It mm-hmm. was really hard. So right at that same time, we were in a church, unbeknownst to us. It was really legalistic. We went on a mission trip to Africa, and it was not approved.
By the pastor. Mm-hmm.
Unbeknown mm-hmm. to us. So we came back. It was Jacob and I on this mission trip, and it was such an amazing mission trip. Not anyone in the church would speak to us about it.
You're kind of blacklisted for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I
for listeners,
it.
Legalism is it's the gospel plus, and what you can feel anything there, yep. and usually it's the plus that makes you feel good about yourself. When mm-hmm. and Galatians makes a case of when that happens, actually the gospel isn't really there at all.
That's
it's
right.
just your own and legalism.
It,
yeah,
and it's destructive. I mean, here we are. We're talking 10, 12. 13, 14 years of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I addressed the men with Monica by my side.
The men of the church.
The men of this church.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally called them foolish Galatians. Because I was trying to get the message across, and it was yeah. coming back to me. You're disobedient. You're in error. You're going to suffer. So, you know, I'm a fighter. I'm like, I put it to them, you know, no, actually, you are being foolish Galatians.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a matter of knowing the scripture. It was yeah. a matter of the heart realizing. And so we left. They had really kind of turned Monica against me.
Right.
That I was the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I fell hook, line, and sinker for the legalism.
And part mm-hmm. of the appeal of that is if you do this, this is going to be the result.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very appealing to me. As a God impersonator,
mm-hmm.
that if this is all I have to do and get the result I want, okay, I'll do that.
It seems good.
I yeah. felt so
especially
safe.
When it's your children,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing good for your children. So right after we left that meeting, you know, it was the air was thick mm-hmm. between mm-hmm. her and I.
Mm-hmm.
And tell about that. How I mean, it took a while.
When George came back from the missions trip, when George was gone in Africa, I realized that the church wasn't saying a word. It was a Sunday morning, and I was in the nursery with one of the babies, and I realized they're not going to say anything about George. They're not, and it's a very small church. And that was the day that the scales fell off my eyes, and I realized I have been played. I've been played. The enemy has played me very nicely, and I've fallen for something that's very evil and wrong, and I was cut to the heart. My own, I believe it was like an Eve moment, and all of us women, we understand what that means. I really felt so much deep conviction and just wept and wept. And then when George came home from Africa, I was able to tell him, I don't know what the future holds for me. I'm terrified of leaving my safe box.
Some friends.
I'm terrified.
Yeah, it really is.
I am terrified. How do I run a family without all of these boundary lines that are in these easily, I can see everything. I can control it. It's all there. I don't know what the future holds, but I know that I've been wrong, and will you forgive me? So that's something that we have shared with young couples too, honestly, to bring it back around to the people who've been married for 5 years. We saw friends who had children that we admired, and we went to them and said, tell us what you're doing. We just want to copy what you're doing.
What's the secret sauce? Yes.
And that's how we got involved in this homeschool organization.
Mm-hmm.
That took us for this, you know, this ride of these years. And so I do like to tell young couples, be careful about looking for the perfect church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be really careful about going inward with your family to where you're kind of like, nobody else is raising their kids right. I just want to be at home.
Yeah.
Watch out. Please watch out. If you want to talk to us, we'll pray with you.
Yeah.
Please don't fall for it. It will not end well.
So the perfect church or the perfect school or the perfect system does not exist this side of heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're placed in that imperfect environment to be salt and light.
Yeah.
Don't go looking for it or trying to create the perfect environment. We tried home church for a while. Again, I would not recommend that unless it was a very unique instance because of this. I do. I've seen the danger very clearly. And
what would you say to a couple, you know, maybe newly married, married less than 5 years, about a family?
People don't ask me very often. They think that they already know. A lot of people think that George is the one that wanted the big family. But I hear that all the time. It was actually the opposite. So many times George would say, whoa, we have our hands full. This is a good time to take a pause.
Yeah, because every time a child comes, they're rightfully termed a dependent. And so how do I spread the peanut butter a little thinner?
Right.
Yeah.
And you're afraid of that, right?
Yeah.
And God's provision was there to pay for everything for us, but I wanted to be as much help as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was like early in the morning, late at night, there was no downtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just nonstop. Trying to give her a break.
Yeah.
Even hiring help to give her a break. And that was actually difficult.
It was never easy.
It's
not like just hiring somebody is going to take care of your problems.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah. We would say, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Trust the Lord. Don't be afraid.
And don't wait till you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You won't be ready.
Right.
And
no one ever feels ready.
Mm-mm.
It's just not going to happen that way. It's a step of faith. You step out, and you really do have to have a life mindset. When we were at about 4 or 5, we had people in the church coming and saying, well, I can tell you what causes that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Little cutting remarks.
Right. Yeah, they're trying to be funny.
And,
and then Monica's parents also were struggling. And they had an epiphany moment about that, that was not something they should be struggling with, because we were taking care of our children.
Yeah,
we were doing them right, and it was what God was showing us to do.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to not have children. It really is in this generation. Mm-hmm. But we see a conflict out there also. You know, it's not for everybody to have a quiver full of children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we don't promote that.
Mm-mm.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you're marching on the sidewalk against abortion and you won't have a child, you know, is that pro-life?
Does it?
And going to the Middle East, the Muslims, they would look at me and they're like, you're pretty unique, because they have children, and they you know, in their mind, they're having children because it's what you do for God, for Allah. And I'm not so sure the church has that same pro-life mindset. Is it for the Lord Jesus Christ that we have children, or is it an experience and convenience?
Yeah,
they're not going to be convenient.
Yeah.
But at the same time, don't be afraid of having children.
Yeah. I think sometimes new couples will wonder, do I have enough love for multiple, you know, people? And so I'll just ask the question. Do you only love one of your kids? Do you only have enough love for one or two of them?
So my grandmother's famous saying that was passed down to my mom, that was passed down to me, that I'm passing on to my children, that I hope would pass on around all through this microphone.
Now we're passing
that's
on
right.
All listeners.
Here it
yes.
goes.
Here it goes.
Love multiplies, it doesn't divide.
Say that again.
Love multiplies, it does not divide. And I'm here to tell you, and we have tested it. So we've had Christmas in our home with perfect strangers who were neighbors who were Hindus. Every uncomfortable thing you could ever imagine has happened to us. It seems like, no, but it feels like it sometimes. But these things happen, and you just keep telling yourself, love multiplies. So when you have to move, and it's painful, love is multiplying. It's not dividing you. Mm-hmm. You will find more friends. You'll still keep those old friends as God sees it. And it's just multiplying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You weren't limited to, I have enough love for 2.4 kids.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That was grown in you.
Mm-hmm.
As they came and the birth order and all that God did to, you know, he says in Psalm 139, I knew you before you were ever even conceived. But as he brings about these precious lives and souls, they're adding and multiplying love, not subtracting and dividing.
Yeah.
It's hard to actually grasp that when you want to believe you've got a portion and then you spread it around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you have to give God the credit. He's bringing these new people and they're full of love.
Mm-hmm.
They really are.
Yeah.
To love is to fill a need. If you don't have any needs, how can I love you?
It's good, George. I had sent some questions to you ahead of time. Is there anything you had thought of, like, I maybe want to mention this, that this has been a way we have experienced God's goodness that we were reminded of?
I think that in the process of marriage, we've realized that there's hurts and wounds that each of us is carrying that we don't even know. So we're blind. These are blind spots. And that it takes years and years to even be ready to know that the Holy Spirit is opening you up in that part of your heart. And that marriage is a wonderful vehicle to experience healing in the areas that you yourself don't even realize you're broken. So that's another reason why waiting and trying to wait to be ready is that's not going to work out.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that marriage is one of the ways God kind of re-exposes things that I've not dealt with or he hasn't dealt with yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that surprised both of us.
Especially hidden things to your own self. So I'll be very open about it. I had really a lot of difficulty expressing my emotions. And, you know, something like that definitely is related to your past.
So you had emotions, you just
tampered them down, minimized them, kept them under control.
Kept real narrow. I got two emotions. I got content and angry.
Right. Just, you know, it's not that you don't have any, it's that you're fighting them.
You don't allow yourself to feel what you actually do feel.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually, I believe it's more common in men.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just how we're made up.
We
want to be macho and not get emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very destructive to your spiritual life. And being here at Grand Parkway, I see, since I've come, I've seen the men literally being transformed before our own eyes. Mm. Men who would not open up and share anything are doing it.
Mm.
And so that's the testimony of community. It's really what we desired when we came here. We really want community. We trust your theology. We looked at it. Yeah, okay, you're not going to lead us astray anyway.
Right.
But... It's these emotional ties to our spirituality that I think that's the mark of someone that's maturing.
Yeah,
is you're able to, and I've got a long ways to go, but I'm just happy that it's even though I'm 62 years old and it's just starting to come out, I can see it's going to produce amazing fruit. And it's going to produce fruit with my wife, who's like, hello.
And I have been learning through this process that I have to tell George what I'm thinking. So because he was so shut down.
He's not a mind reader? He's not a psychic? No?
Because he was so shut down, it was just easier to keep it to myself because I always came off looking like a crazy person.
Hmm.
Because I had emotions and doubts and... concerns and worries, and all that just didn't seem to touch him.
Syntax error. I cannot compute this. Yes.
And so I got to the point where I was just being quiet. And so now I'm learning that, no, the greatest gift, one of the greatest gifts I can give him is to wait for the right time, but to share with him what I'm really thinking, yeah. even though it might sound a little crazy. And I think we really should, while we have a chance, talk about what's happening in our lives right now, George.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you never know who could listen to this.
Okay.
And so we could cover that base while we're here.
Okay. I don't know if I'm very good at summarizing, but we've needed to downsize our home.
Mm-hmm.
And we've needed...
You've gone from 10 children to...
Three.
Yeah.
Three.
And so
yeah.
here we have 4,600
square feet. There's some echoes now in the space.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay. And so from the last 7 years, I actually made a plot of my bank account.
How very showed engineering
it, showed
of
it
you.
To the kids, you know. And it's this downward trend, and it mm-hmm. looks like it's on zero now. But it's not quite.
Yeah.
But, okay, we're selling the home for that also. But in going through the process and doing everything, we realized, we are open. It's God's giving us the freedom to go if we want.
Mm-hmm.
We've always said we want it to be near family in the Rocky Mountains. And so we are.
And your family's in Montana?
Montana, Wyoming.
Yep.
Idaho.
Mm-hmm. We have a son in Idaho.
Right.
Couple grandbabies.
Yeah.
So can I back up a little bit?
Yes. Go ahead.
So it was our anniversary, July 14th. Can I share that?
Yes.
Okay. So we were sitting at a nice restaurant, but we were having a hard time being happy. We had decided to sell our house, but we had no idea what to do next. And it made sense to just get Ethan through high school. But mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a life goal. There's no vision in that. Or
it's not the unforgivable sin if you move while your kid's in high school.
Thank you. You've mm-hmm. said that, and that's helpful. Mm-hmm. So I asked George, the mood was a bit somber as we're at this lovely restaurant celebrating this amazing, wonderful event. But I said, George, what are you looking forward to in the next year? And he was quiet, and there was some choking up, and he's like, I got nothing. And I said, what are some things you enjoy? And he mentioned the men at this church, and he mm-hmm. had things to say, because we do have delightful things in our life. But what are you mm-hmm. looking forward to?
Yeah.
Nothing. So I held it together somehow and said, this is pretty serious, and I think we need to talk to someone soon, because our house could sell tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and we need to be a team to make the next decision for what's coming. This is a
yeah.
really important transition period for us. And you're at this point, I think we need to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I listed five or six couples, and he said, no, I want to talk to Al Williams.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So shout out to Al Williams.
Yeah.
I had listened to their podcast, but I didn't know them very well. I had only met Nancy at the church picnic, but I liked her.
Yeah.
I said, great, let's do it.
Yeah.
And he called them the next morning, I think, or texted mm-hmm. Al. And they met with us that day for mm-hmm. hours.
Yeah.
Listened to us, mm-hmm. listened to George go and asked questions, because you always wonder, like, how hard have you really tried to get a job? You know, like, have you been willing to look outside of oil and gas? It's all the standard questions.
Right, yeah. Yes.
And so they were very thorough. And then at the end, he pulled out the church devotional that's handed out mm-hmm. by the front.
Yeah.
He doesn't always read it, but he had happened to read it that morning. And it's about 14 sentences, and sometimes there will be like four good hard hitters.
Right.
This time it was 14 hard hitters.
14 hard hitters.
They spoke right
our name
to
on it.
Your situation.
Us.
Yeah.
And then they prayed over us. They encouraged us to know that we think of you guys as strong pillars and people of faith. You've been faithful. Just hang in there. It doesn't make sense why you're not finding a job.
Yeah.
We'll help you, you know, send your stuff to us.
Yeah.
So we left there just very encouraged. And within 3 or 4 days of processing through that whole experience, I said to George, what if not getting work here is the direction? All this time I've been thinking it was going to be the job that would give us direction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What if this is the direction? We are actually allowed to leave now.
If instead of here's the job, go here, there's famine, so leave here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Isn't that strange? Because the reason
strange, but there's plenty of biblical examples of that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But we don't have famine in the children's school, and our church and our friendships are so rich that we were slow to make that. We've been praying about this for years. But it's what we think of as slow. God doesn't count as slow.
Correct. Yes.
And so this has actually been a process of praying for years. And it all starts to fit together. So now, to finish what you were saying.
So I guess to lead, to proceed, we have sold the house.
Okay.
It's in the final weeks.
Right.
And we're going to Montana.
You're moving.
Billings, Montana.
Okay.
And it's kind of hard. We can't really do anything with securing what we're going to do in Montana until the house sells, because we're down to that place where but it's really, in a way, it's really cool to think about, to look at my plot, you know, as the provider of the family, and look at these years of the plot going down, and all through that time we haven't been in need.
And Psalm 23 was still true.
Everything was still true about God's faithfulness.
God was your shepherd, and he didn't leave you wanting.
He was not going to leave us. And I had a good friend in Alaska that would say, it's all a test. It's all a test. It's like, it's more than that. But because we're walking without knowing what's in front of us.
Right.
And you're just making the steps. So it's going to be a new... New adventure. Wow. It's going to have its problems.
Yeah.
But we're just saying, wow, this is really interesting.
What feelings do you have?
Yeah, where's the feelings chart? We need that.
Yeah.
I have them printed and laminated at my house because we all struggle so much with that. But
it's probably several things all at the same time.
I know for certain that God has tied up some loose ends of our family. So there would have been a couple years ago, I wanted to run away from Houston, Texas, because our family was imploding. And if I had, I would have known, I knew that is running away. That is faithless.
He's escaping.
Yes. Yeah. And those things, one by one by one,
all of them,
are healing and resolving by God's grace. And I think our children will be delighted to come visit us in a cold climate, because that's most of them, that's what they know and knew, but they don't necessarily want to live there. So we're going, this is what George has always said. I'm going to have a cabin in the Rocky Mountains. He's been saying this for years. So we're just doing it a bit earlier. Even if George doesn't get work, it's going to be okay. I have a sense of peace that my children all want to be in school now so I can get a job, and I'm okay with that. I'm ready.
Your years as a unpaid educator.
Unpaid everything. If I got $10
to walk a cook,
exactly, $10 to walk a dog, I was like, woo woo, I got paid.
Wow. And so this can kind of feel exciting and hopeful, and maybe also, because like you mentioned, maybe a little grieving in that. You know, the connections you've made here, even the most recent one with Alan Nancy, that's a meaningful, that we mentioned before, this is what's so important to be a part of, really, not just attend, be a spectator, but be embedded in the life of a local church. Otherwise,
because,
you don't get that.
Yeah, because our family's so big, I like to make the analogy of an octopus. So I get these mental images. So it's like all those tentacles of each member of the family are hooked in to the local church. And we have the heartbeat in so many different areas because we have the different children's ages, and George does something completely different from me. I'm in the children's building. So it's a wonderful part of our lives that I know we can't replace it.
Right.
I have a sense that since we're leaving the Bible Belt, that we'll be called to step up. This church has been an encouragement and support to us when we've needed it the most. Now we're going to take that with us to wherever we end up and really encourage people in the body of Christ to be real.
Yeah.
And also people who would never think of going in the doors of a church.
Right.
Have conversations with them.
Right.
About the realness of the hardness of life that we've experienced these last 5 to 7 years.
Okay. So moving to Montana. Back to where it began for you?
It really is a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
I go up in the hills I like to get very high with a backpack.
Yeah.
And Monica has never been introduced to that, so I want to do it.
She's running out of excuses with these little babies.
Right. No more excuses.
Yeah, she's started to tender camp now, so the next one is high altitude backpacking trips.
Okay.
Just something to get away and enjoy your life.
Yeah.
But also, there's family there that needs us. We know that. It's my mom.
Yep.
She's going blind.
Yeah.
She needs us. We don't know the future.
Yeah. And so the feeling of kind of release here's the next thing, you're released from here, you get to pick.
Mm-hmm.
That's at the same time exciting and a little fearful.
Definitely. Yeah, because all I can think of is the kids need to get into school, and school starts August 22nd. That's all I can think about. And I keep telling myself, stop.
Well, I'm so glad that to have the conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
My last question is, how would you summarize your experience of God's goodness in your life to a small child, a 10-year-old?
Mm.
How would you put it in their language?
So, go ahead, George.
I always struggle with putting it into the simpler terms,
mm-hmm.
We walk by faith. Yeah. So even Jesus says that the little children, come to him with faith. So no matter what age you are, you can exercise faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such an it's a part of marriage that you're in this relationship and you're following Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that you're following Jesus and putting him first. And you really need to make sure when you get married that you both have that in common. Don't get in a relationship that someone doesn't love the Lord. That would be so difficult.
There's 10-year-olds taking notes right now.
Okay. Yeah.
Monica, anything you would say to a young child?
Yeah.
How would you summarize?
I'm not so good at speaking on my feet.
Not that you've had practice with your own 10 children.
Right. Store away God's word in your heart while you're young. Put it to music. That's my favorite way. Because those truths will follow you all the days of your life. They really will. And you're never too far away to just turn. All you have to do is turn. And God's right there.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind, because you're not going to do everything right. And honestly, nobody else is expecting you to do everything right. But you will struggle. You will fall. Yeah. But God is right there with you.
Well, George and Monica, thank you so much for sitting on this podcast. I'm thankful for the lunch conversation we've had these last couple of years. And I'm thankful to know your family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sad and at the same time excited for you. Sad that you'll be going, but I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed this conversation, do us a favor and give us a 5-star review where you listen to this podcast right now. And make this program easy. What happens is it makes it easier for others to find. Also, do yourself a favor and subscribe to this podcast so that you are the first to know as new episodes are released. If you have suggestions for other stories, contact me, Blake@grandparkway.org. These are the stories you've missed.